Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 140. I will entitle this psalm, Deliver Me, O Lord, from Evil Men. The heading to the psalm says, For the Director of Music, a psalm of David, so we will assume that David wrote this psalm. David begins in verse 1. We'll read to verse 5. Rescue me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who devise evil things in their hearts. They continually stir up wars. They sharpen their tongues as a serpent. Poison of a viper is under their lips. Selah. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have purposed to trip up my feet. The proud have hidden a trap for me in cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set snares for me. So, if you recall all those Davidic psalms at the first of the book of Psalms, David is continuing a well-trodden path. I'm in trouble. There are bad guys out there, and they're after me. Please deliver me. So this psalm is basically a psalm about David's fears. The psalms express every human emotion. All 150 of them do, and this one is about fear. But note, even though David is afraid, he nonetheless, in this psalm, expresses confidence in God. We drop down to verses 12 and 13. We read this. David says, I know that the Lord upholds the just cause of the poor, justice for the needy. Surely the righteous will praise your name. The upright will live in your presence. So even though the evil people are trying to kill David, he is upright and he's going to live in God's presence. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that the style of this psalm resembles those of David in the former part of the book, presenting the usual complaint, prayer, and confident hope of relief. I've already said that. Jameson Fawcett and Brown affirms it. So David in the last part of verse 1 says, Preserve me from violent men. What violent men were after David? Well, it's unclear which of David's many enemies are being referred to, and it's unimportant, as Jameson Fawcett and Brown say. Possibilities of Saul's courtiers being the violent men mentioned, because Saul and his courtiers, his administration officials, if you will, they were after David, as you recall, at the end of Saul's reign. The Philistines, as David left Saul's capital, and he ends up in the land of the Philistines, and they came after him. David had to fight the Philistines, and then it could be Doeg the Edomite. If you recall this story, David was fleeing from Saul. He went to Nob, which is near the Mount of Olives, and the priests were there at the time. Tabernacle was there, and Ahimelech was the high priest. David was hungry. Ahimelech gave him some bread. Doeg the Edomite happened to be there. And later on, when Saul was inquiring about David's whereabouts, Doeg the Edomite said, yeah, I saw him up there at Nob. So Saul said, okay, we're going to kill Ahimelech and all the priests. Please go do it, he says to some of his officials. They refuse. It's a horrible thing to kill the priest. Doeg the Edomite says, I'll do it, and goes up there and whacks Ahimelech and all of his associated priests. That could be it. And of course, there's David's son, Absalom, who near the end of David's reign raised a rebellion and started a civil war against David. So David had plenty of violent men after him. Which one is being particularly referred to here is unknowable and unimportant. These violent men, David says in verse 2, devise evil things in their hearts. They continually stir up wars. Well, guess what hasn't changed in 2,000 years? Or I should say 3,000 years. Verse 3, these evil men sharpen their tongues as a serpent. Now, David could be referring to the physical characteristics of a serpent's tongue. As John Gill says, the tip or extreme point of a serpent's tongue is as small as a hair, and so exceeding sharp and piercing. I didn't know that. I take his word for it. I don't ever want to examine a serpent's tongue to see how sharp it is. So David could be referring to the physical characteristics of a serpent's tongue, or he could be referring metaphorically to the sharpness and cunning of the serpent. Well, I've seen snakes. I live in the country. All the snakes I've seen don't look all that sharp and cunning to me. They usually run from you, actually. But think of the serpent in the garden, which, of course, was really the devil taking the form of a serpent. Or, according to Michael Heiser, the Old Testament scholar, the Hebrew word there is nakash, and it refers to a demon, not a serpent. Different translation. But whatever. It's usually translated as serpent, who was deceitful, deceived Eve, deceived Adam, or deceived Eve at least. So David is either speaking of a serpent's tongue's physical characteristics, or he's referring metaphorically to the sharpness and cunning mental sharpness of the serpent, or he could be referring to the damage that a serpent's tongue could do. As John Gill says, this expression here may design the calumnies and detractions which were sharp as a razor, as swords and spears and arrows, and as the tongue of a serpent. Whatever, we know what David means. His enemies' tongues are sharp. Poison of a viper is under their lips. Continuing on with the snake metaphor, a snake's poison is under their lips, and of course the poison of a snake will do you in, at least put you in the hospital. I had a dog who got bit by a snake once, and he limped around for a long time. David also says in Psalms 58, verse 4, first part of the verse, their poison is like the poison of a serpent. So he was used to that metaphor. Snake's poison is not good. And of course, some snakes, as soon as you get bit, you're history, like a cobra. Selah, he says at the end of verse 3, that is probably a musical term for the choir director. Remember, this psalm is directed to the choir director. The heading said so, for the director of music. In verse 4, David says, keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men. Now, violent men is sometimes translated as a violent man, singular instead of plural. If it's singular, Adam Clark takes the singular man who David wants to be preserved from as Saul. That's reasonable. Let's look at the different translations. Here are some translations that have the phrase in the singular. The KJV has man. David is saying, preserve me from the evil man. Young's Literal Translation says, preserve me from one of violence. The American Standard Version and the Bible in Basic English say, the violent man. And Darby says, the wicked man. Now, of course, you could take those singular and say that they're representative of plural. Preserve me from the wicked man. It means any wicked man that happens to be coming, which would, of course, make it plural. So that's why the translations are ambiguous. Some translations have it straight in the plural. The NASB says, The NASB has preserved me from wicked men, or violent men, actually. And the God's Word translation has preserved me from wicked people. The Home of Christian Study Bible and the New American Bible have preserved me from the wicked. Minor point, doesn't matter. Whether it's singular or plural, David needs to be preserved for them who have purposed to trip up my feet. Verse 5, the proud have hidden a trap for me in cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set snares for me. Now the wicked people are now hunters coming after David. Selah. We go now to verses 6 through 13 and we will finish this psalm of David. David continues in verse 6. I said to the Lord, you are my God. Give ear, O Lord, to the voice of my supplications. O God the Lord, the strength of my salvation, you have covered my head in the day of battle. Do not grant, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not promote his evil device, that they not be exalted. Selah. As for the head of those who surround me, may the mischief of their lips cover them. May burning coals fall upon them. May they be cast into the fire, into deep pits from which they cannot rise. May a slanderer not be established in the earth. May evil hunt the violent man speedily. I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and justice for the poor. Surely the righteous will give thanks to your name. The upright will dwell in your presence. Now, in this last part of the psalm, David has turned from stating the problem, which is the wicked are after me. That was stated in verses 1 through 5. And now he's turning to, God, I'm praying to you for help here. He prays. And then, in the last two verses, he says, I know you're going to answer and maintain my cause. In verse 6, David says, O Lord, give ear to the voice of my supplications. What is a supplication? That is a fancy way of saying, begging. A begging, we don't have that English word, but that's what it means. I'm begging you, God. That shows a little bit of the fervency of David's prayer. David also said in Psalms 28:2 in the King James, hear the voice of my supplications when I cry unto thee, when I lift up my hands toward thy holy oracle. When I cry, when I make supplication, this is not just a prosaic prayer. Oh God, please help me. This is what James referred to as a fervent prayer of a righteous man. Give ear, God, to the voice of my supplications. 7, O God the Lord, the strength of my salvation. Now here, interestingly, the NASB has God in all caps, G-O-D, and Lord in lowercase, capital L, little O, little R, little D. The note in the Holman Christian Study Bible, which also does the same thing, has God in all caps and Lord in lowercase letters, The Holman Christian Study Bible note says here, the Hebrew is Yahweh, YHWH, usually rendered in all caps, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. And I guess the reason they did that, if you did it the normal way, O Yahweh the Adonai is what the Hebrew says, you would end up with O Lord, capital L-O-R-D, the little L-O-R-D. O Lord, the Lord. And that doesn't sound good, so they translated it this way. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation, you have covered my head. Well, what does it mean to cover David's head? It means to put a helmet on his head so he doesn't get whacked. Here's another scripture that speaks that way. Paul in Ephesians 6:17 says, and take the helmet of salvation, the helmet which delivers you from getting your head chopped off, and take the helmet of salvation, 1 Thessalonians 5:8. Paul says, but let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet, the hope of salvation. So the helmet is a helmet of salvation. It protects you from getting killed in war. And of course, then it's applied metaphorically to spiritual protection from Satan and his minions. So David says, you've covered my head in the day of battle. In a battle, you've put a helmet on my head so I don't get killed in the war. Contrast that with what the evil will have their heads covered with. We read in verse 9, as for the head of those who surround me, may the mischief of their lips cover them. Well, that translation is the NASB, and it might be a little bit unclear. Let's look at some other translations. Holman Christian Study Bible, verse 9, when those who surround me rise up, may the trouble their lips cause overwhelm them. The NIV for verse 9 says, let the heads of those who surround me be covered with the trouble their lips have caused. In other words, David's enemies speak, trouble occurs, and that trouble redounds to them, comes back on their head, and causes them misery and grief. Of course, that's an imprecation, and we know that David is good at imprecatory psalms, which is fine. It's not personal revenge. It's governmental justice. He's head of a kingdom that needs to take care of evil people. Speaking of imprecations, verse 10 says, let hot coals fall on them, on his enemies. Let them be thrown into the fire. The enemies be thrown into the fire, into the abyss, never again to rise. Ooh, David wants justice and deliverance, does he not? Now, going back to verse 8, David says to God, God, do not promote the wicked people's evil device. Notice that wicked people are always devising evil against the righteous. They are not content to be neutral. They don't want to live and let live. Here's another example of David's feelings about the wicked that shows that the wicked are not neutral. Psalms 37:12, the wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes at him with his teeth. And that is true. Wicked people just can't let it go. Why do you think that atheists spend 23 hours out of the day figuring out how they can attack Christians? They get on the internet and go on and on and on and on and on. Why? They just can't let it go. Why? Because they're suppressing the truth. And unrighteousness, they know that there's a God in their heart. They already know this, as Paul said in Romans. And so they're pushing it down, and that takes a lot of effort. And so they're going to damn these Christians who are trying to curb their licentious lifestyle, if they have one, which they probably do, or at least their selfish, independent life apart from God. And so they lash out. Look at the LGBT, LSMFT plus community. Are they content just to go out and live in their homosexual relationships? Oh, no. They've got to censor people. They've got to run them off of Twitter. They've got to shut down bakeries who refuse to bake wedding cakes for their perverted wedding ceremonies. They're not neutral. They're coming after you. And even if the Christian bakery says, hey, there are other bakeries who will give you a cake, just go get one from them. Oh, no, that's not good enough. We've got to shut this bakery down. We've got to use the civil rights laws of our state to do it, and we've got to force the Christian bakery to hire lawyers and to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court. No, the wicked are not neutral. They have to be fought constantly, and if you think you can compromise with people who are trying to destroy the righteousness of God, you're crazier than they are. Well, at the end of that rant, we are now prepared to continue by looking at verse 9 again. May the mischief of their lips cover them. The mischief of their lips. You have heard, I'm sure, of that old proverb, sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. That proverb, folks, is a lie. It's not true. Words can hurt you. In fact, harmful words of defamation are legally actionable. They are actionable at law. If I slander you or defame you or libel you or slander you, you can come see me in court. So words can hurt you. And here we have the words of the mischief spreading lies about David. And David responds, okay, I wish you will end up in hell or cast into the fire. That might be temporal fire. It could be eternal fire. We'll just say it's temporal fire because I don't know exactly how much the Old Testament people knew about the afterlife. They knew about Sheol, which was kind of a shadowy place, didn't really talk about eternal punishments. Jesus sort of elaborated on that, so we'll just assume it's temporal fire. But either way, David says, I want you to burn up. He also says in Psalms 11:6, upon the wicked God will rain snares, fire and brimstone and burning wind will be the portion of their cup. Justice will be served. And there is something in the heart of every human being that loves to see it, loves to see justice. At the end of verse 10, David says he wants his adversaries to fall into deep pits from which they cannot rise. Now, that could be a burning pit which the evil person cannot physically get out of. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a burning pit. It could be just a pit. Either way, I'm not sure what he meant there, but it could have a spiritual reference. It could be that David is saying, I wish they would fall into a deep pit and they will not be able to rise again to the resurrection of the just. They might rise physically, but they will rise only to be punished eternally. Adam Clark says this is a proof that the Jews did believe in a resurrection of the body and an eternal life for that body in the case of the righteous. I think that's reading an awful lot into that psalm, reading a lot of the New Testament back into the Old Testament, so I won't go that far. It also assumes that David is saying the unrighteous cannot rise, but we all know that the righteous will rise. Well, it doesn't say that. That's just an assumption that David would be thinking that. And again, I think that's reading too much into David's Old Testament mind. In verse 11, David says, may a slanderer not be established in the earth. This is how Clark describes a slanderer. This is a great quotation. He whose tongue is set on fire from hell, the talebearer, slanderer, and dealer in scandal, with the three-forked tongue, wounding three at once, his neighbor whom he slanders, the person who receives the slander, and himself who deals in it. In other words, Clark is saying, three people are hurt by slander. The person who's being slandered, the person who hears the slander, and the person who delivers the slander. Slander is a terrible thing. Sticks and stones will hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. Oh, really? I don't think so. And so in verse 12 and 13, David says, I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted. And of course, he's referring to himself. He's the afflicted one, and God's going to maintain his cause, sort of like it's a legal cause. He's going to give justice for the poor. I guess he's referring to himself there as poor. Maybe he was at a time in his life when he didn't have any money, which was a good bit of the time. Surely the righteous will give thanks to your name. He concludes in verse 13, the upright will dwell in your presence. And on that happy note, we are now finished with Psalms 140. And we are now prepared to go to Psalms 141, which I will entitle, Give Ear to My Voice. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.